Welcome to IoT Real Talk. No fluff, no filler, just real pros talking about real programs, real challenges, and real results.
Cars are no longer just machines. They are connected platforms shaped by IoT and defined by software. In this episode of IoT Real Talk, Raj Kanaya, General Manager of the Automotive Business Unit at Aeris, explains how IoT is transforming the auto industry by enabling over-the-air updates that make vehicles smarter and safer, turning cars into software-defined systems that evolve over time, and forcing automakers to think and act more like tech companies. Whether you're an automotive, IoT, or you're just curious about the future of connected vehicles, this is a conversation you won't want to miss. Welcome back. I'm Susanna Song, Chief Marketing Officer at Aeris.
And I'm John Connett, Chief Product Officer at Aeris.
John, nice to see you, be back here on the pod with you. You and
likewise.
I don't see each other enough, so it's always good to connect here.
It's been a while since we've done one of these.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have Raj sitting right next to you in the room.
I do. Thank you for joining us, Raj.
Yeah, great to be here.
Yeah, we have the privilege of actually bringing one of our very own to the pod. So welcome, Raj. Raj, first question. You're leading the automotive business unit. Tell us more about your mobility suite offering and what your team does.
Yeah, so the automotive business unit within Aeris, we sell a connected vehicle platform. So that's essentially on top of the wireless connection, enabling an auto OEM to have the full kind of cloud capabilities to send commands to the vehicle, get data from the vehicle, run new services, either for the owner or for the OEM, connection into the dealer, and connection to other back-end systems. So it's essentially creating value from that wireless connection. And we have customers globally who use all or part of that platform. And it's considered one of the, being connected is considered one of the core capabilities a vehicle of the future needs to have. We see tremendous interest and growth in our business.
Yeah. You know, we keep hearing that cars are becoming more like rolling computers. So from your perspective, what does it really mean for vehicles to be software defined?
Yeah, it's a good question, because in some ways the vehicle is actually already all software. It has been for many years, but the way that software is deployed is essentially in silos. So if you have a modern vehicle, it has what's known as these ECUs, or electronic control units, which are essentially hardware and software combos, and controlling all aspects of the vehicle. So it could be, you know, fuel injection, brake system, the cockpit, and in a modern vehicle, there could be 100 of those. So the vehicle's already a lot of software. The problem is all that software is deployed in these silos. So what the auto OEM is doing is they are essentially integrating all of these different ECUs. So there's issues with that model it's brittle. It's very slow to move forward. You can't update it. It doesn't fit with the future world where you have autonomous vehicles and you have a lot of sensors in the vehicle that need to be processing data, and you need to be looking at data across different different sensors. So the future is really what they call the software-defined vehicle, which is really defined by two things. One is high-performance compute that's kind of centralized, and then software, which is kind of disaggregated from the hardware. So it kind of lives independently. So think of it, you know, if you're explaining to, if I explain to my wife, it's like an iPhone, where you buy hardware and you, you know, you buy your phone, but then there's additional software you're loading on after, and you may pay extra for that software, but the phone in that case is continuing to deliver more value, and that's where the auto needs to go as well.
Is in the software defined vehicle world you're describing, is that software provided by the automaker, or is that suppliers, or is that some combination of the two?
It's a combination, and I think it's a lot of stuff that needs to get played out today, because you can imagine right now with suppliers, tier one suppliers who are comfortable with the old world, they see this as very threatening because who's developing that software? Could it be the OEM developing the software? Could it be other suppliers? So what we have here is, you know, one of the challenges for the existing automakers is just the inertia around the current model and figuring out who's going to own what in this future world. How are you going to make money? And that's where some of the new entrants, whether it's Tesla in the US, Lucid, Rivian, or all the Chinese OEMs who are starting from a blank sheet of paper, they have an advantage. So it's definitely a moving target right now. I think that most of the legacy OEMs are taking kind of an evolutionary path. They're taking steps in the direction. It's not a clean sheet of paper. And the question is really, can they move fast enough and be able to compete? And I think it's an exciting time in the industry because of the level of change. And I think if for those OEMs who can move very fast, I think there's a tremendous opportunity. And for those who can't, it could be a really bad outcome.
It's interesting with all that software. I got to imagine that keeping that software up to date, particularly if the software is coming from multiple different suppliers, I can imagine that model has got to be challenging to manage.
Yeah.
How is that typically done?
Yeah. So it's, you know, the OEMs run the gamut in how mature they are. So Tesla, as we know, is very mature and does a lot of over-the-air updates. We have some customers who don't do any, right? And they're basically kind of the old school of, you know, the vehicle ships and it has what it has. So, but I think that everybody understands that the future of the vehicle isn't software. That software needs to be updated. And table stakes for survival are to be great at that, right? You can't just be, you have to be excellent at software development and updating. And I think one of the things that we see with these over-the-air updates is, and with vehicles, is that they're incredibly complex. So you have on the cloud side, you have a very complex system that's also integrated with other back-end systems and potentially third parties. Then you have a wireless connection, which is sometimes unknown or, you know, flaky, or it's got its own issues. And then you have very complex software on the vehicle side. So what we see with customers is that even those who are getting mature at over-the-air updates, they need to improve on their ability to handle situations where it's not working, right? So if you have, let's say, 100 vehicles that you're updating, maybe 70 work out the door and maybe 20 work over time. Maybe the other 10, you just don't know what's going on. And how do you figure out what's happening? How do you debug that quickly? I think where what OEMs need are the tools to be able to figure that out in a scalable way, because otherwise, they're just going to be chasing their tail with things being in a kind of in a half done state with all the updates. So it's a lot of things that still need to be figured out. But I think that the key that I see is that the OEM needs to change and orient towards speed. And actually, this is what we hear when we talk to auto executives is, you know, there's the usual concerns around cost and quality, but the biggest thing that they say is like, we need to move faster. And the way to move faster is you need to have the tools to be able to identify issues as they come up. You're never going to be perfect. It's kind of like what Mark Zuckerberg said, you know, you have to, you know, move fast and break things, right? But, you know, it's a little different in the auto landscape, because you could kill somebody if it's not done well. So there's real safety implications. But I think the need for tools to really enable speed is really becoming table stakes for the industry.
Yeah. So how does this model change kind of the design processes looking ahead, Raj?
Well, I mean, everything changes, right? Everything changes with how you're designing, how you're building, and how you're operating. And a lot of it's cultural. You know, it's like in terms of the operations, the cultural change. If you look at an auto OEM, it's they're generally built for over decades for safety. Safety is number one, which is obviously a good thing because these are machines that can kill people if it's not done correctly. So, but when you have that mindset, you tend to be very slow, right? So the, you know, now if you add on top of that AI as an accelerant to everything, when I mentioned design, build, and operate, AI is accelerating everything. I think it's almost impossible to say that anybody's ahead in AI because the level of advancement is so incredible. Mm-hmm. I was reading something that the agent capability is doubling every 7 months, which is just unbelievable. Wow. You know, compared to like Moore's Law, which is every 18 months. So, you know, the human mind is designed for linear thinking, not for exponential, right? So this. Mm-hmm. Every 7 months, a doubling means in 70 months, you're 2 to the 10, you're basically 1,000x improvement, right? So I don't think no one's grasped that, but that's I don't think even as a technology company, we haven't grasped that. We're always surprised actually every day on what's possible. So I think the key for the OEM is to, more than anything, is to culturally align themselves to this new world. And it's going to be hard because when you do that kind of change, you're going to have quote unquote winners and losers within an organization, executives that kind of got ahead with a certain model. And now that model and the power centers have changed. And that's really where the OEM is right now. They have a lot of very talented people, really smart people, but it's just culturally, can they make that shift? But I think for those who can, it's super exciting because the opportunities are really endless.
Yeah.
It's, interesting, given all this change and the move to software-defined vehicle and the supplier ecosystem, and of course now all of the automakers themselves having to basically become software companies, and of course the obvious focus on safety and risk. I have to imagine that, cybersecurity is becoming a major topic of concern for a lot of these players. Just as with any connected software product, there's going to be vulnerabilities. There's going to be concerns about exploitation. Mm-hmm. How are you seeing the industry respond to that concern?
Yeah, I think what we see right now is that, they're very concerned, and there's things around. They've been beaten up over the years on data privacy and issues like that, of using customer data in a way that's not appropriate, and those become very high profile incidents. GDPR obviously is out there, but what I generally see is that, and then there's regulations like in Europe, WP29, and there's different regulations around cybersecurity that've come in. I think that many of the OEMs are, how do they check the box to meet the regulatory requirement? I see that obviously they need to, right? So what's the bare minimum? And they know they need to do more, but what do they do? How do they roll it out? I think they're struggling, right? And it's kind of like AI. They know it's like, hey, we need to move faster, but how do we really move forward? I think there's really a gap there. And I think what they see is they're paranoid about it. They're absolutely paranoid. Because if you remember, like 10 years ago, there was this incident with Chrysler, where there are these researchers who came in and they tried to hack that vehicle through the connected vehicle platform. And they're able to control that. Mm-hmm. And that is like, for people, it's like visceral, like, oh my God, I have this car. Now it's driving on its own. And it's
scary.
It's very scary. And wow, it really, I remember I was at some party and someone's like, oh, I can't buy those. They just hear that sound bite. Yeah. It's very concerning. So it's essentially where the OEM is kind of caught. It's like the future software that's undeniable needs to be updated. The attack surface is increasing tremendously. The risk is growing a lot, and the reputational effects, or really just even the existential effects from an attack, could be, you could be out of business, quite frankly. You can imagine there's this huge attack. So I think they're really worried. They're behind on addressing it, at least from what we've seen. But I expect that the adoption to a lot of security products that, you know, enterprises use today, or you know, variants of that, will be because the effect is so much greater. Like if you have, you know, 2 million vehicles on the road and someone's able to control that, and then let's just say, for the sake of argument, change the braking performance dynamically, right? Just like, okay, just hack it. You can imagine what that could lead to, right? It would just be unbelievable, wow. Which is even so much worse than hacking like a computer, right?
That,
you know, it's interesting. They don't even actually have to change anything. It's just, they could threaten to change something and say, pay me millions of dollars or else I will do this.
Yeah, John, I am curious. So this is a real life, you know, scenario possibility. Mm-hmm. So with your background expertise, how can concepts like zero trust be actually applied or enforced in vehicles then? Any thoughts around that?
No, it's a great question. And, Raj mentioned something that I think is very important to this concept and the kind of the driver behind it, which is, the attack surface is increasing. Right. So if you think of blowing air into a balloon, as the balloon increases, right, just like as software, as complexity increases in a car, the surface area of that balloon increases. The same thing you could sort of visualize is the attack surface of this vehicle. It's constantly increasing. And so you need to be able to do something to shrink that balloon, make it smaller, as small as possible. You'll never be able to fully secure something. That's, I think, the reality that people need to come to grips with, is nothing is ever truly 100% secure. But what you can do is you can limit the surface area, right? You can limit the number of places where somebody could come by and poke a hole in that balloon, or reduce that, blast radius, if you will, for that vehicle. And that's where the concept of zero trust, which is, a tried and true concept in more of the traditional IT space and increasingly in other sort of operational technology spaces. And I think the same holds true for a connected car. And so there's a couple of different ways you can think about it conceptually. Obviously you want to do things in vehicle to limit, how things can move potentially laterally within the vehicle. And I think, this is a concept that is well within the control of the car manufacturers, right? They can, proverbially firewall different parts of the vehicle, like the braking system is firewalled off from the telematics system, for example. So there's things that you can do in the vehicle. And then, of course, there's things that you can do outside of the vehicle, right? So, classically speaking, just like any connected device, there's a network, right? And in a network, you can do things to wall off certain parts of the network to limit what can connect and what cannot, either from a port, a protocol, an application standpoint, and a backend service standpoint. And I think that certainly holds true in connected vehicle. And I think you're already starting to see manufacturers think about this as they think about, how can I start protecting my vehicle, starting from a kind of an outside in approach? So there's lots of things I can do in the vehicle. What can I do from outside the vehicle from a network perspective to limit, the pathways an attacker can come through? And so that can be doing basic things like limiting the types of applications that the vehicle can talk to, limiting the type of connection points into the vehicle. So, a lot of these vehicles, they'll have, a cellular connection into the vehicle for updating the software. That same connection might also be providing, updates to the applications, the consumer applications in the vehicle. You might have in-vehicle Wi-Fi using that same connection, or maybe a separate connection. Creating either logical segments or physical segments by having different connections, for example, are both tried and true ways of limiting or implementing, zero trust concepts in these increasingly software-defined vehicles, for sure.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that you know, that we see in that you're kind of mentioning is that this, the notion of a layered defense, like there's not just one security solution. You actually have to have multiple layers and they all kind of reinforce and cover each other because there's no silver bullet here, mm-hmm. right? And that's a, I think that we're gonna see a lot more of that. I think what's like if you take the old, you know, vehicle of, you know, yesterday, it was kind of like it was air gapped, basically. It's like mm-hmm. in order to do anything in that vehicle, you need physical access to it, which mm-hmm. is hard. It's certainly hard at scale. Now it's you can really think of, you know, the leading OEMs have 20 to 25 million vehicles that are connected today. Now, if you have the right kind of infiltration, it's like the kind of damage you can do is crazy. At, you know, with just a you know, with a, you know, click of the keyboard. So I think that the threat is going up, but it's really, you know, the OEM, they don't have a choice. They need to become great at this stuff mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. if you don't, you're not going to be around. The future of the car, I mean, if you look at the electric vehicle, it's just not as profitable as the combustion vehicle. You don't make as much money on aftermarket. It's much simpler. So you have to replace that revenue stream, which is actually one of the big revenue streams for an auto company, with software, subscriptions, new services. And that all requires update. It requires download. So you have to do it and you have to be great at it and it has to be secure. Otherwise, you know, it's a very bad outcome.
Yeah. Great answers. I have to throw this question in. It wasn't in the summary teaser, but with the new .32 eSIM standard, how are auto OEMs reacting to this? I'm assuming it's very positive because they have more control. What are your thoughts, Raj and John? Either of you can take this.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just answer kind of just it's definitely very high interest. I think that the control is something where the mobile network operators have had a lot of sway on the auto OEM, and they've been able to really lock them in. And so them being able to move subscriptions be able to also implement new kinds of business models where we have an OEM that's doing something where they can, you buy the vehicle and let's say you are a Verizon subscriber, you can then add the vehicle onto your Verizon subscription, right? So it's like that carrier portability is something that also enables kind of new services. So it's a really high level of interest among OEMs. They look at, and ultimately it's like, look, how do I lower cost? How do I simplify? And mm-hmm. how do I avoid lock-in, right? Those are the real questions there. You know, .32 kind of addresses all of that.
Yeah, I think to build off of Raj's answer, there's clearly efficiency gains for the OEM to gain, certainly. I mean, just on top of the obvious ones of being able to migrate carriers, it's the simplicity of your SKUs, right? Now you can have a single SKU vehicle that you know, you can sell anywhere in the world, and it has one SIM in it, right? That's standard, and it can be localized on any carrier that supports the new standard. So there's definitely efficiency gains there. You know, I think what's going to be interesting is how it changes the commercial model for both the automotive as well as the carrier. You know, the carriers, you know, classically have been giving very, very aggressive pricing and deals to automotive, just given kind of the size and the scope and the volume of usage that those vehicles bring to the table. It'll be interesting because, you know, the model classically is, if I know from a carrier standpoint, if I know, you know, you're going to be stuck with me for 10 years, I can be much more aggressive on pricing because I know maybe it'll be negative margin or lower margin in the beginning. But, you know, as my network costs decline over time, by the time, you know, that vehicle is reaching the end of its life in, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 plus years, you know, my cost will be much lower than what you're paying me on a, you know, on an aggregate basis. You know, with with now that lock-in no longer existing, it'll be interesting to see if automotives can still command the same type of aggressive pricing that they've been historically getting. So time will tell, but it's certainly going to be a big change in the market.
Yeah. There's a lot to cover in the auto industry. Final question, Raj, where do you think the industry is going in the next several years? What does the future look like?
Well, I mean, it's for an industry that's kind of for decades was kind of slow moving in a way. I mean, obviously there's advancements, but, you know, over the last, let's say, 5 to 10 years, there's what they call the, you know, cased, right? Connected, autonomous, shared, electric, right? Those are the kind of four big drivers of the industry. So obviously connected's there. We're kind of core at Aeris and all aspects of connected. You know, autonomous, you kind of see that happening. Shared, which is, you know, different mobility models. Certainly there's the Ubers, but there's so many others. Many of those haven't worked out. Mm-hmm. But now what you start to see is a combination of new mobility plus autonomous, which is like, you know, the robotaxi market, yeah, which is really, you know, taking off more than I thought. Mm-hmm. Okay, you know, you have Waymo, you have also Tesla making major moves, and then electric, which we all know is absolutely huge. Maybe slowed down a little bit, but it's really, you know, unstoppable. And I think we're just getting started. So those are kind of underway right now. And then when you add on top of that, you have AI, right? That's just, what's that doing to everything? It's like a pouring gasoline on that, you know, level of innovation. So I think that, we are, you know, at Aeris, it's super exciting because for us, it's like innovation, you know, quote unquote disruption, inflection points are opportunities. I think it's helping our customers navigate this in a way that, you know, enables them, you know, to be ahead and, you know, to lead the market. So I think it's super exciting from that perspective. And, you know, we just have to, you know, really, it's like, I think there's that quote that was, you know, Charles Darwin made, or, you know, was misattributed to Charles Darwin, that, you know, the species that survives the longest is not the one that's strongest in any position at any point in time, but it's the one that changes the fastest. And I think that's so true right now. It's like, you need to be, just moving, you know, doing new things. And then I think, you know, the sky's the limit, because there's going to be a new set of leaders, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the time to kind of, you know, stake that ground.
Yeah, well said. Well, thank you to our guest and our friend and colleague, Raj Kanaya. And thank you to our listeners, of course, for tuning in. If you have feedback about today's podcast or questions for the Aeris team, please contact us at podcast@aeris.com or leave a comment below. And don't miss our next episode. This one's going to be different because I'm just starting to bring it together. We will bring in here in this room, we will be bringing several influential global M&O partners who make the fabric of our IoT accelerator platform. And we do this as we kick off our annual partner summit in Chicago. So you don't want to miss that one. So until next time, I'm Susanna Song.
And I'm John Connett, and this is IoT Real Talk.
From all of us at Aeris, thank you for listening to IoT Real Talk. We hope you'll join us again for more real stories from real practitioners shaping the future of IoT. Tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube, or visit aeris.com/IoT podcast.